This week's episode of Squared Circle Gazette Radio is dedicated to the memory of Daniel House. Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke, and while we're talking about great teams, how about ROH and TNA tagging up on Wednesday night? With that said, I believe Destination America has already decided which is the Hitman and which one's the Anvil.
I'm G. John Chase, and whilst trying to figure out which is the best tag team of all time, I wasn't certain whether it was the Harris Brothers or the Blue Brothers or even the DOA.
I can't make a joke. It's Harlem Heat 2000. Come on, people!
And I'm Carl Jones, and for looking into this greatest tag team, I've been doing some extensive research and watched a lot of tape. Shaving Ryan's Privates, Debbie Does Dallas, and a movie called Logjamming. Sorry, not that kind of tag teaming. Oh.
This is the panel for the 41st Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us talk about all-time best and favourite tag teams next. And welcome to the 41st Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke, alongside G. John Chase.
Joe is gonna kill you.
Carl Jones.
Yo.
And Kieran O'Rourke is not here this week.
Yeah!
after trolling everybody in last week's intro, saying that he was fired from Squared Circle Gazette, he's actually on a stag do in Berlin, doing a God knows what to God knows who. He will be back with us next week. But this week we are here to talk about your all-time favourite or all-time best tag teams, depending on however you want to see it. This is one that we threw out to you guys. Before we get to our individual picks around the table, as well as what you sent in for your picks for all-time favourite or all-time best tag team, just a quick bit of housekeeping here. You can go back and listen to our archives by going to squaredcirclegazette.podbean.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Squared Circle Gazette Radio. But getting now to the all-time favourite tag teams, this is a discussion that we've been kind of batting around and thinking about having for quite a while now. It's probably taken us this long to get to it. But as a big fan of tag team wrestling, obviously the WWE is kind of trying to have a bit of a resurgence, apparently, with this Elimination Chamber match coming up this Sunday. But we've got all-time great tag teams to talk about today, none of which are on the pay-per-view on Sunday, just so everybody knows. But we'll get to it right now. For the first nomination for all-time favourite or best tag team, Victory from Pro Wrestling Only says, "The Road Warriors would be my favourite. I don't consider them the best or anything, just my favourite. From the first time I saw them in a magazine during their Georgia run, they just looked so different and cool to a 10-year-old kid. Once they came to the AWA and I was able to see them on TV, they instantly became my favourites. The muscles, face paint, spike collars, haircuts, being billed from Chicago were all reasons I love them. The interviews were also a thing of beauty. Nothing like a good roadie squash either. Those were and still are a blast to watch." Bruiser Casey from WrestlingForum.com also chimes in with Animal and Hawk. "They redefined tag team wrestling and became that one rare team that could main event. In all honesty, many tag teams up to that point, and many after, were just put together and didn't strike many as ones that could carry promotions. But the Road Warriors could do just that. Very few people have seen a team like Animal and Hawk prior to their coming on the scene in 1983. Two muscular, aggressive, violent wrestlers who took the world by storm. When you heard Iron Man blaring over the PA system, it's about to get real when they stormed the ring and took out their opponents. Paul Ellering was used as their mouthpiece a lot of the time, but they could hold their own on the mic as well. Ellering reminded me of a puppeteer. He controlled those two just enough to make the wrestling world seem like it'd be a lot worse if he wasn't around." The It Factor from Wrestling Form also says, "As far as best, I think everything is a matter of opinion, and though they never did much for me, I'll say the Road Warriors because of the way they paved the way for powerhouse, do it our way, tough guy tag teams." And finally, Fanny Pack from the UK Fan Forum says, "The LOD. I'm watching Raws from September 98 when they were on their arse, and I'm still rooting for them to beat DOA. To me, the golden age was that 2-year stint from 90 to 92. As a kid, teenager, they were badass." So the Road Warriors have to be mentioned here during this discussion, so we'll see what everybody thinks around the tables of the Road Warriors for all-time favourite, all-time best. What do you think?
Well, when you've got a tag team and people will refer to the cheer as the Road Warrior pop.
Yeah.
You know there's some credence there to the remarks of the emailers. I personally love the Road Warriors. Not what I would call my favourite. I think largely in the sense that I never felt they sort of meshed as a working team, if that makes sense, in the more classical sense of a tag team. There was just something missing there for me. But yeah, you talk the look, the sort of the intimidation factor, real rough houses in the ring. I think actually better workers than they were really giving credit for. Like, Hawk, to me, was always the heartbeat of the team, in truth. I've got nothing against Road Warrior Animal, but...
I do.
Well, I have in later years, but...
I always preferred Hawk. I always thought there was actually some steam in Hawk as a singles guy, because he just had far more... He always struck me as having more charisma than Animal.
Absolutely.
More awareness of what the team really was, and more awareness of how to really connect. Animal, I always thought, as good as he was in the role, I thought that he was limited to that role, whereas I never thought that Hawk was.
Yeah, well, Animal was very much the hot tag guy for the comeback, wasn't he? But I did really enjoy them as a team. To the emailer's points about them being a team that could draw by them, maybe not necessarily carrying a promotion completely, but being a significant draw, there's definitely evidence to support that.
Yeah.
Particularly when you look at it, it's sort of the last hurrah, I suppose you'd say, for the AWA was when the Road Warriors were there and they were feuding with the Freebirds. You know, they did great business in Georgia. I'm not going to jump up and down about them paving the way for muscle-bound tag teams further down the line, see Powers of Pain.
Yeah, not one of my favourites either.
The Legion of Doom, or Road Warriors, whatever you want to call them. A great look and a great kind of... I guess they're brilliant at the old squash match, which is fair to say. That kind of worked to their benefits, kind of hit a lot of their weaknesses. Cool music, depending on where they were. Undeniable, they were a huge draw in the 80s in particular, and to a certain extent in the 90s here and there. Saying that, though, I'm not a fan of the Road Warriors. I've never have been. I'll say like I particularly like detest them or anything like that. They're certainly better than the Harris Brothers, but it's
faint praise if ever there was any.
It's just they've never clicked with me. They look badass, and the finisher was awesome because it looked like it killed everyone they did it on. I have an issue with their promos because pretty much their promos, if they didn't have their manager with them, I don't rate their manager at all. And coming from a guy that likes his managers, he's just one of the ones where I just don't buy into what anyone says about him. I don't think he particularly gave anything to me, whatever I've watched from him. As just them on their own, you know, outside the rush line, all it was just shouting at the screen. And there are a lot of tag teams that do that. There's a lot of guilty tag teams. I'm not gonna say they're the only ones. It's just always shouting. There was never anything different about their promos.
I will say everything that you just said about as a criticism of the Road Warriors, and it's, you know, in terms of personal opinion, obviously it's all valid. But I will say that I think that a lot of the charm with the Road Warriors, and the reason why a lot of people gravitated to them, is because they were the perfect team for the era that they were in, which is why they connect. The huge bodies, the paint, yeah, the screaming promos, which while you can say they're not for you, and that's completely fair, at the same time, look at what got over in the 80s was those larger than life, loud, aggressive, in your face promos. Keep in mind, they started as heels that eventually got turned babyface by the audience. So it was that matter of, obviously, they came out, they were heels, they were aggressive promos. Obviously, when they turned, it was a matter of they don't want to completely cheapen the characters and change the promo style and give you the lighter side of Hawk and Animal, which no one really asked for. So, but I do think that the reason this team works so well is because it was the Goldberg of tag teams, to put into a more modern context that people could probably relate to if you didn't live through the time period, I think.
And I think the thing is, in particular, as we say, with shouting promos as well, that was very much sort of atypical of a 1980s promo, whether it was heel, babyface, tag team, or singles guy. It was very, very much the shouting, very loud,
Hogan,
boisterous,
to be honest.
Yeah, shouting promo, which is why someone like, for example, in the singles context, Jake Roberts stood out, because he wasn't always screaming, wasn't always hollering.
Yeah.
The reason that the shouting works for the Road Warriors is because you look at the overall appearance as well. In that sense, it comes across as legitimate. There's a difference between, say, the Road Warriors shouting about how tough they are, how they're going to kick someone's ass, to, say, the Rockers.
Yeah.
The Rockers start shouting, bellowing. No one's buying that in a month of Sundays. The Road Warriors do it with that look, with those spikes on their shoulders.
With Hawk popping, flexing his neck, and the collar pops off. God damn.
The veins going, you believe it.
This is one of those things where modern eyes will jade the way that the Road Warriors are kind of judged in this kind of context. Because if you look at them for a work rate team, they had good matches, but they're not going to be considered like that. If you're looking for great promos, they were good, but again, they're not the best promo team of all time. No one's even claiming they are. But again, at that time, in that place, for the way they were pushed, the way they looked, they were just fucking kick-ass. And like I said, they drew, so obviously it worked.
I think they probably suffer a little bit in retrospect off the back of the second WWF run, which will be more prevalent in the minds of a oh God, I was going to say new generation. but no pun intended, I assure you. When you look at it in that context as well, when that's more fresh in people's minds, I could see how that would hurt them as well.
Moving along to the second nomination from you, the listeners. Number one WWF fan from TPWW Forum says, "The Steiner brothers are my favourite tag team of all time. I like the dichotomy in personalities between the two, despite them being brothers. The pretty boy Scott and his mildly retarded brother, whom he was always very protective of. Their match with Gordy and Williams at Beach Blast 92 is probably the best tag match I've ever seen. I remember watching it repeatedly when I was a kid." Nightro from WrestlingForum.com says, "The Steiners, a tag team that have dominated Japan and North America and won world tag team titles everywhere they went. For two big strong guys, they could do absolutely anything in the ring, from power moves to suplexes to mat wrestling to brawling to going up to the top rope. They were strong, quick, and innovative. The Steiners would wrestle you, suplex you, and beat you like you stole something." Top Rope Podcast from Pro Wrestling Only says, "A team unlike anything else I'd ever seen when I started watching. Just these two jacked up dudes in singlets who would drop dudes on their fucking heads. It was great. Yes, as an adult I can go back and look at match structure, selling, etc. But the kid in me says, suplex, top rope DDT, just love it." And one Shogun09 from the UK fan forum says, "The Steiners will always be my favourite tag team. The contrast between Rick's basic but brutal offence was great. The suplexes were awesome. Their double team moves were unreal as well. Yeah, the Road Warriors Doomsday device was good, but Rick and Scott won up that with their Bulldog and DDT variations. And of course, Scott's Frankensteiner was breathtaking, especially for someone of his size to be pulling off a move like that. They had cool and colourful ring gear, looked like they could rip your limbs off, and work pretty much everywhere that mattered during their era. They were incredible from about 89 to 96, and I don't remember seeing a bad match from them during this period. The only thing they weren't great at was interviews, but I don't remember that mattering at the time." Couple more nominations here. Monster Heel from the FOW message board says, "Two jacked up guys," there's that term again, "who tossed other people around with the greatest of ease. I just missed their WWF run as it happened, but caught them from the beginning when they signed with WCW in 96. By the time the NWO feud got kicked up, they were favourites of mine, and I wanted to see them stop the outsiders. They were just a peg below Luger and Sting to me. When I got smart to the business and started to watch tapes, I appreciated the Steiners even more as a tag team. Seeing them have so many great matches actually made me resent Scott for getting so big in the late 90s. I'm sure they would have declined eventually anyway, but they probably had a while yet to be awesome." And finally, Vince Verhey from FOW says, "Having gone back and watched old Nitros, I don't see how anyone can disagree with the Steiners. There's no disagreement, it's just a fact."
Well, let me tell you a story about the brothers Rick and Scott. another very good choice from the emailers. When I mentioned earlier about Road Warriors not necessarily meshing as a team in the classical sense, Rick and Scott definitely do.
Yeah.
And they were excellent workers when they didn't want to stiff people with clotheslines in later years.
Oh, they still beat the shit out. Trust me, some of those matches...
There were still some nasty bitches.
Yeah, especially to jobbers. They weren't kind to jobbers.
But then neither were Dynamite and Bulldog.
Or the Road Warriors.
There's a pattern here with these tag teams. Damn bullies. But they had some absolute great matches. Just as you were going through the emails, I was just thinking of a few off the top of my head. Sting and Luger at Super Brawl, which I was surprised didn't get mentioned there. I thought it would. A little forgotten gem from SummerSlam 93 against the Heavenly Bodies. I absolutely adore that match. I think that's brilliant.
There's so many great ones that the Steiners had. I was even going to Japan to the match of Vader and Bigelow, which I really like. They had so many great ones. Again, this is like the tag team for me as a kid instantly gravitated to, just because they did so many cool moves. The Frankenstein I absolutely adored as a kid. A few great Frankenstein. Remember the one he did like Brian Knobbs at Halloween Havoc when he pretty much DDTs him?
Shit, I remember seeing him do the one to Samu as well, and to think to do it to a guy of Samu's size as well as Knobbs, and again, not another small man. And it, as the emailer said, for someone of Scott Steiner's size to be able to pull that off is nothing short of freakish athletics.
Yeah, the WrestleFest match with Brett and Owen, if you remember that match, it's another really good one. I think it's on one of Brett's DVDs. The Steiner screwdriver didn't get mentioned there either. Another fantastic move.
Yeah, it's a weird one, because they're one of those teams that I don't immediately think of until someone suddenly mentions it, and then as soon as they do, it's like, oh, this is fucking obvious now, isn't it? It's just, and it's because we're doing the second one after the Road Warriors. for me, I'm a lot more on the side of Steiners over Road Warriors in terms of that kind of badass team. And from a looks perspective, you couldn't get the opposite way, really, compared to, like, you know, the spiked shoulder pads, like the colourful, multicoloured Michigan State, you know. But I did catch them just before I stopped watching in 93. So I think actually the last match I saw them with was the Heavenly Bodies at SummerSlam 93. The funny thing is, when I was a kid, all I remembered, really, and this is ironic, that the star of the team was Rick.
Really?
As a kid, right?
It was just that barking, wasn't it? That's what it was. That
yeah,
barking.
That's what it was. Because Steiner came across as... When I say Steiner, I always mean Scott. When I saw Scott, I always thought... This is a ridiculous statement. I always thought Scott was the straight guy in that team, right? Like, he was just the plain guy. And Rick was, like, the character, because he had the head garment on, the dog-faced gremlin, woof, 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 and all like that, and he just runs around the ring. And, you know, and the crowd would just freaking eat it up. Watching the roars from 93, Perfect was over huge, Doink was over huge, hence they turned him. Steiners were the other group as well, where it was smokingly over in New York. And Rick Steiner in particular comes across as a star, and I remember him being the main star in that team. It's only afterwards, when I come back into watching as an adult and I started watching the Steiners again, and going back and watching the very same time period, I think, like, Rick had, like, the personality, but Scott was the fucking star of that team. From a wrestling perspective, that guy, like, I mean, he's, you know, down the line, obviously, like, certain injuries or just general steroid abuse, abused his body to the point where he wasn't as good as he used to be, but fuck me, in those early 90s, man, as a wrestler, as just a technical pound-for-pound strong guy, as you said, he could just suplex anybody, and I'm pretty certain half the time he just grabbed someone by like, their foreskin and just fucking suplexed them. Like, it didn't matter. It's just like, if someone tried to punch him, like, he would grab their little finger and suplex them using the little thing. He just grabbed any part of them. He would just come up with suplexes to entertain himself. Rick was the same. He would do the same, but he wasn't quite as much of an asshole as Scott was.
You can't talk about their promos, though, because there's nothing to talk about. Yeah, they were poor promos.
Oh, trust me, Scott Steiner in those early years, he was a terrible promo, which is hilarious. And granted, he wouldn't become much more eloquent in later years.
But he'd be funny.
But he'd be funny. But he got funny in his later years. We're going now to another pick that's a little bit off the timeline here, but we still go with Steve Pachenik, who emailed in and says, I have a few teams that I considered, but I chose a team with fantastic personality and charisma that were paired together as an afterthought, never meant to get over as they did. A pairing that totally outclassed their competition in every way. Ladies and gentlemen, Stunning Steve and Flying Brian, the Hollywood Blondes. Gary Thompson also said, for me, the team that beat them all is the Hollywood Blondes. Two men chucked together and they made it work. Great combination of Pillman the Loudmouth and Austin the Muscle. Who knows what would have happened if politics didn't get in the way. G Trick from FOW says, I always loved the Hollywood Blondes. I know they didn't have long staying power, but it was just a deal they threw these guys together who didn't have anything better for, and man did they make it work, with loads of tremendous matches. And this is where Austin has said he really started to get into the promos part of wrestling, being around Pillman all the time. Their entrance theme kicked all kinds of ass as well. And Lou Pickney from FOW finally says, the Hollywood Blondes were something special who should have never been broken up by WCW.
Yeah, I mean, fan of the Hollywood Blondes, big fan of the Hollywood Blondes, but yeah, the main thing with me for this one, and it has, you know, it's just been mentioned there, is when we're talking like the best tag teams, the duration in which they were a tag team is really the negative in deciding that these guys were the best, because they were together about, what, eight months, was it exactly? And now, so it's got the mixed bag. You got the one, like, they weren't together long enough where you could really properly make an argument that they're the best, or anything like that, but, you know, they could be your favourites, fair enough. But at the same time, they were kept together and they were willing to work together and they were given the opportunities, and I think they could have become one of the greatest tag teams ever just because of the dynamic of the high-flying Brian Pillman and the ground worker of Austin is a fantastic dynamic, which I'll go more into with my pick of why I think it's the best tag team dynamic. And, you know, just the charisma of both of them. Though I think when he said, like, Brian Pillman was the loudmouth, yeah, I get that, but Austin wasn't too far behind. Austin had a lot more subtlety to his assholey kind of us in that group, where he was a lot more kind of like smarmy as well, you know. I'm just thinking mainly of the flair for the old and stuff, where he's like falling asleep and just Austin's face as he's just like shaking him and stuff. Like, Austin's fantastic. I mean, Pillman, obviously you're going to wax lyrical about him, Liam, and I'm sure Carl will about Austin, and so you shall, because you're even bigger fans than I am. But yeah, a great tag team. A real shame they didn't last long. longer.
I'll just chime in here and say that I fucking hated the Hollywood Blondes when I was a kid watching Worldwide. I just thought they were so obnoxious.
That means they're good.
And I know it means they're good. And that's the thing, when I grew up and I kind of understood a little bit more, I just realised, God damn, look at these two. And I went back and watched the matches with Ricky Steamboat and Shane Douglas, and I went back and watched the deal with Flair and Arn, and the promos they would cut with their, yeah, when they're doing the Jobber Tag Team Tournament, which is just awesome. There's so much you could say about these two in terms of what could have been, but to me, that unfortunately is where the discussion ends, what could have been. It's not a tag team dynasty about what was. There were a lot of good matches in there. Like I said, the Steamboat Douglas matches were really good. Really enjoyed the Dos Hombres match with Zenk and Steamboat in the cage at Slambury. The promos were awesome. Pillman clearly is the leader of the team when you watch him. Just the body language, it's kind of a subconscious thing. To your point though, Chase, as time goes on, you can see Austin's feeling it far more, to the point where by the time they're in the feud with Arn and Flair, Austin is right there. At the very beginning, Pillman, I think, is the motor mouth, and he's the one that's chiming in a lot. It's such an old-school dynamic of these guys just being complete stooges with the fans, but being complete workhorses. One of the best things you can say about Austin, he had such a motor on him. He just refused to fucking... He was just a fucking machine.
How much did you pay for that Lantico then, H? Steve, that's double A. That line, and the last time I saw something like that, it had an apple shoved in its mouth and was roasting over an open flame, will probably more so than Austin 316 says, "I just whipped your ass," will be the two lines that made me fall in love with Steve Austin.
There's another good one with that. Granted, it's Pillman, not Austin here, but there was one where they're doing an interview with Shivani. They're talking about how they're doing like talent scouting for opponents. They talk about Dos Hombres. And Pillman says, "I hear that you did a little bit of a talent scouting yourself when you were south of the border there, Shivani. Don't worry, the charges were dropped, weren't they?" And it's just like such a great little line. But they were just wildly entertaining. And consider the fact that in this year of WCW, the only things that were good all year for me were Vader and the Hollywood Blondes. And that was it, man. Everything else, there was, not to say there was no talent, but they just fucked up everything that they had.
They were,
it was a travesty that they decided that this was the thing to change.
Yeah, I mean, they were such great pricks. When you make Liam care about the French fries, then you know this team is onto something. Both great works in their own right. They meshed really well. Anyone out there, because I know there are some who think that Steve Austin is nothing more than a brawler, you start watching him from this stage with Pillman in his team and tell me he is not an excellent technician.
In terms of whether I grade these on the favourites, these are in the top tier. I'm even wearing a Hollywood Blonde shirt right now, as you can all confirm. Moving on to another candidate here, and actually we'll go to you, G-John Chase, because there's a few people who echo this one before we get to our listeners' thoughts on this team. We'll get to yours.
Yeah, favourite tag teams. Pretty much when it comes to what's my personal favourite, it didn't really take longer than 2 seconds. My pick's the Hart Foundation. The reason why I think the Harts are the best as well, the Hart Foundation, is the actual physical wrestling dynamic of that group. And I'm talking about the big guy working with the small technical guy. Because a lot of other tag teams that we've mentioned and we're going to mention, you'd either have something like the Road Warriors, where they're two big guys, two powerhouses, or you'd get like the Rockers, where it's two smaller guys, two high flyers. The two individuals, their styles are so similar within the team. Okay, they might have different personalities or different moves, but their styles are very similar. So once you kind of get that tag, the pacing of the match doesn't really change. The great thing that the Hart Foundation have on any dynamic that's like this is you had Bret Hart, whether this is as baby faces or heels, you had Hart work over the baby faces or get pummeled, and then you tag in to Neidhart, which was always the best way to use that dynamic, because Hart was the talent in the team. Neidhart was very limited, so they worked to their strengths. So because of that, I remember as a kid, I liked Bret Hart. I liked him a lot, but I also really liked Neidhart because I liked the power that he had and liked the kind of the intensity he had when he came out.
He had an explosiveness to him.
That's the word I was thinking of, the explosiveness. They'll switch it up on occasion where it's actually working over the big guy, and you're thinking, oh, okay, well, how the hell's Bret going to get the hot tag? What is he going to do? And so you just always got something different depending on who got worked over and who got the hot tag, which is why I always love that dynamic. And, you know, and I said, I always liked Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Once we got where the team split up, that's when I kind of realised just how good Bret Hart was, because obviously Neidhart kind of went down by the wayside.
How shit Neidhart was.
Yeah, yeah. And then Bret Hart, obviously supporting him in his Intercontinental title reign and so on and so forth, realising just how good he was. And it's only when I'm older that I watch back and see that he was really pretty much the fire of that team. I think it'd be incredibly harsh to turn around and say it was a one-man team.
I think it was because
Neidhart brought a lot to it. Okay, he didn't bring much of technical to it, but he brought everything that Hart was lacking at that time. And I think that's what a great tag team is. It should be a tag team that's kind of lacking in certain respects, but like they join together and create one great whole.
Very logical, very very sound argument there for you to choose your favourite tag team. I enjoyed the Hart Foundation very much during their run in the 80s. They had some great matches for the tag belts on some of the big stages as well. You think of the 2 out of 3 falls match with Demolition in 1990. The forgotten gem at SummerSlam 89 that is Hart Foundation versus the Brainbusters, which opens the show, which is a really nice, good 15-minute classic match. A really good team that meshed really well. And there was an argument for elements where Brett was lacking initially in his run in terms of the promos. And I don't want to use the word charismatic, but in terms of an overall presentation, the more sort of almost outlandish nature that you needed at that time to get noticed in the WF and to remain relevant, you know, in the land of the giants and the over-the-top characters, Neidhart brought that to the team. And it helped having Jimmy Hart as a mouthpiece as well, because Neidhart, although very charismatic, his promos, if you give him free run, could just be a lot of rambling and not necessarily mean anything. So I always thought it was sort of an underappreciated role that Jimmy Hart had there to keep those promos in the early days on tact. I'm probably not quite as high on Neidhart as you are, if I'm honest. You know, he throws some of the shittiest forearms I've ever seen in my life.
After seeing China, nothing's the worst.
That's a very good point. Very good point, well made.
Fucking Masawa compared to China.
Sweet Jesus, yeah.
The charm with the Hearts was a lot of the house show matches that they had. Matches with the Rockers, like at MSG, which was a really good match. So they did like time limit draws and stuff with the Rockers.
Yeah, some great matches with the Bulldogs.
But the Bulldogs is what I was going to say, especially that house show run was what really kind of lit things up. Interesting, actually. We'll get to some of the feedback here. Baby from WrestleInform says, my favourite is and was the Hart Foundation, Brett and the Anvil. The cool Hitman and the crazy Anvil combo was a great dichotomy. A great oil and water combination with different characteristics, looks and styles that went well together. I love the Hart Attack finisher, and they had some other great tag team moves. Their battles with the Bulldogs, Brainbusters, and the 2 out of 3 falls match of Demolition are among my favourites. So there you go. That might have been you, actually, Carl, who sent that in. Shishin KOPF from TPWW says, Hart Foundation, liked everything about them. Bret Hart is my favourite wrestler of all time, and I love their feud with Demolition in 1990. Jake Roberts, parole officer from the UK Fan Forum, says, a favourite has to be the Hart Foundation. The smooth in-ring operator and the rock-hard powerhouse who is borderline insane just worked on every level. Tribal Prophet from F4W says, the Hart Foundation for me. I love the SummerSlam 2 out of 3 falls match. I think I always loved the idea of a tag team that complements each other. One big strong guy, one more agile technician. Probably why I instantly loved Jericho a few years back too. I will say though, one of the things that I really clicked with me for the Hart Foundation as a kid especially, Brett was always had this very likable face, and it's a very silly kind of thing to say, but he always seemed like a cool, likable, kind of bit more down-to-earth guy compared to the larger-than-life thing, which really kind of helped the team stand out. And Anvil, again, to some credit for Neidhart here, came across like a really fun personality, you know? It was that thing of like, the cool, fucking, these guys who are good, they kick ass, they're cool.
Pink.
Yeah.
That was the thing that really stood out to me. When you have Macho Man dressed as, like, you know, the rainbow, right, then you'd get Rick Rude with his custom tights. That's how the Hart Foundation stood out to me. Pink. Yeah. This shocking freaking neon pink.
Moving along now to a more current tag team. Lupidate from TPWW Forum says, Edge and Christian. I loved Enigma Edge when he debuted, and when they saddled him with a tag partner, I was disappointed initially. Me too, as a matter of fact. But cheesy as the Brood was in retrospect, my 15-year-old Mark self ate it up. The entrance, the music, fire, blood. Then they went on to have the greatest tag feud of my lifetime when they, the Dudleys and the Hardys, tore the house down at every opportunity. When that ran its course, it was onto the 5-second pose incarnation, so that totally reeked of awesomeness. These guys could do comedy, hardcore, spot fests, whatever you asked of them, and they were pretty much the most entertaining guys on the roster while they were at it. Also, how many teams can you say both members went on to win the world title? Ryan Pelly from WrestlingForum.com says Edge and Christian. Their chemistry was fantastic, obviously, since they were friends since childhood. The way they could play off each other was remarkable, and they had some of those genuinely funny segments in wrestling history, not to mention a catalogue of outstanding matches and moments. King Pitcas also votes for Edge and Christian, saying they were the best one. Brilliant, iconic, innovative matches, and they were among the strongest characters on the show at a time when the WWF was absolutely packed with strong characters. Edge and Christian.
Yeah, funny enough, these guys are number three on my favourite list. Yes, folks, I have a list. In terms of like the Attitude Era, this was like the team for me. I mean, it was just the characters of Edge and Christian. Now, they may not have been the most exciting team of the three during that main feud that the emailers were talking about, but they were certainly the most entertaining from a character perspective. They had buckets more characters than the Dudleys and Hardys all put together. It was a team that kind of like, I think it took a while for them to gel with the audience until they turn heel. I always just remember like them wearing either some like silly foam cowboy hats or whatever, to take or the jersey of some like shitty team from the town that's fucked up somehow. Fat Elvis's. I remember the whole whether you think it's good or not, when they dressed up as the Conquistadors. Oh, yeah. During that whole thing was great. Also, the one I always found funny was where they try to get out of a match. I don't know who it was with. I think it was like the Dudleys.
Acolytes.
Is it? And they're doing the thing where they're pretending that they're ill, yeah. And like Christian's got like food poison, and they're pouring this like slop into the toilet, trying to fool Commissioner Mick. And it's just like Mick as well, like during that little time period when he was the commissioner those three were comedy gold. And that's and the great thing with Edge and Christian was they were great on the mic. They meshed really well. They were a tag team that weren't afraid to not look cool.
Oh, they were chicken shit heel champions. Yeah. They were dodging everybody. Yeah, and trying to hold onto the belt. It was great.
And that's just great. When you're looking at a time period where you're having people like Triple H who's desperately trying to be liked as a heel,
yeah.
You know, there was Edge and Christian who didn't give a fuck. They were just out there having fun. And they really kind of... And you think about the amount of times they went over as well during those feuds with Hardys and Dudley. They went over more than the other two together.
And in my opinion, rightly so. Oh, yeah. When we talk about those three teams...
As we'll get to.
Together, for me, it's not even close with these three. I put Edge and Christian so far above the other two teams. Outside of Edge and Christian and probably Kurt during that spell, there aren't many that are willing to play the sort of cowardly heels. And it's testament to them that they were. I always remember being quite surprised at how successful they were as a team, because you mentioned there about them not initially breaking through, and we would all look at the tag team ladder match as the match that sort of helps them get through the sort of the proverbial glass ceiling. But I was always surprised, because I always thought this would be the team that they wouldn't commit with, and I always assumed it would be the Hardys, and so in that sense I was pleasantly surprised with how it panned out.
An interesting thing when it comes to talking about these guys as the best, because when you actually look at how long their tag team run was, it was actually only a couple of years. It was not that long, yeah. I mean, in terms of like as a pure tag team. Yeah. The one thing that I'll say, and we'll come to the Dudleys and Hardys shortly, as a matter of fact, we'll probably get to them next, but I think that it's an interesting conversation point when you look at 1999 in the tag team division for the WWF, which wasn't a good year. They were flip-flopping the belts everywhere. They needed a stable backbone, and as good as the Dudleys and Hardys were, and as over as all three teams were, and we'll get to that dynamic shortly, Edge and Christian were certainly the backbone. Because, I mean, they kept it on them, they kept the heat on them, they dropped it to Too Cool and get it back, they dropped it to the Hardys and would get it back, dropped it to the Dudleys and get it back, you know, and they helped the other teams look great.
Yeah, well, it's very much that sense of, in terms of sort of a solar system type analogy, you've got Edge and Christian who are very much the main planet that the others revolve around, and it's always them that it comes back to. And you know, from what we talked about just briefly there, and when you go back in your mind over what they were doing at the time, it's not hard to see why.
How's this for a celestial tie-in? Jupiter Jack Daniels from Wrestling Forum votes for the Dudley Boys. You can't write segues like that. The Dudley Boys were his vote. I just loved how they turned a comedy gimmick into one of the most vile and vulgar tag teams of all time. In their path to destruction, nobody was off limits. Whether it was their brothers, females, or even fans, they had respect for no one and dared anyone to get in their way. It was truly the Dudleys versus the world. So much that they're the only team to hold ECW, WWE, WWF, WCW, NWA, TNA, and IWGP tag team titles, as well as multiple other championships. As a team, they've been successful everywhere they went, but that ECW run from 97 to 99 was out of this world. And Derek R. Hubbard from F4W also said, "As for the best tag team during my generation, I would say the Dudley Boys get the nod. They could work heel, they could work face, they could work high spots, they could work garbage, but they could work with anybody." I'm interested to get your guys' opinion on the table, because of the three teams you just mentioned, the Dudleys are the one I have the least fondness for. I did like them a lot in 2000 when they did get hot with, you know, putting the women through tables and stuff like that. The table gimmick was one that was dying to be used on WWF for years, because it was a hot thing in ECW. The Public Enemy and Sabu were able to get over with it, and I just thought, you know what, if a team, if a person ever gets to use the table gimmick, they're gonna get over. And the Dudleys jumped on it, and it worked very well. I'm not a fan of the ECW run. I'd be lying if I said I was. I didn't like them before they became a heel tag team. I don't rate them that highly afterwards. And I can understand that some people have a fondness for the ECW act and for the ECW mentality of what they brought to the table. I actually thought that given everything in ECW at the time, there were so many things that were so much better or potentially better to be getting the opportunities and airtime the Dudleys got. I never bought into them in ECW.
I don't mean to sound disparaging to ECW as a whole. A lot of things that they did were excellent. Particularly before, in truth, before their first Barely Legal pay-per-view, a lot of the stuff they did was really edgy and really good. But with regards to specifically the Dudleys, I'm with you. I was not a fan of their ECW runs attack team. How many good matches did they really have? And someone can throw out a Balls Mahoney Spike Dudley match that we'll watch back and think, you know, it wasn't actually a good match, was it? You just popped for the flaming table at the end, and you popped for that last spot or the balcony dive. And so the bell to bell as a whole, they didn't have a lot of good matches. Their promos, whilst they could get a lot of heat, and this may sound somewhat contradictory on my part as a big Steve Austin fan, but I've always held the Dudleys in the same regard as Shane Douglas, where if you take away the foul language, there's not much to their promos.
The thing with the Dudleys and the WWF, because they felt like a team, much like the Public Enemy, that I thought, I don't know if these guys are going to succeed in the big time, because they had an act that I didn't think would translate to a major league environment. They changed it up a bit, and they did work, but at the same point, I think that people are kind of, they kind of missed the fact that the Dudleys didn't seem like they were that hot for that long. I mean, they were hot for a while, but it only feels like about a year and a half, because by the end of 2001, man, they felt so played out, and they stuck around for like 3 more years after that, and I never felt like they were that they got back to that same level of relevance they had for that 1 year run.
Again, I would agree entirely. It's just, I think people tend to forget that when they first came into the WWF, you know, Bubba had the stuttering gimmick. They were wrestling the Acolytes in dog shit matches. It was certainly less than auspicious start for them as a tag team in the WWF, and I don't think anybody thought they'd belong for that world. Yes, they got over with the table gimmick, and I don't want to sound too disparaging, because they did get really over at one point, but to your point there, Liam, it wasn't that long a period in the grand scheme of things. I was never that high on them, really. I always had the impression that people popped more for the fact that it was someone being put through a table than the fact it was the Dudleys. It was that case of, oh, it's the Dudleys, so we'll get the table. Not, it's the Dudleys, we're pleased to see the Dudleys wrestle.
ECW, I will gladly keep my rose-tinted glasses on with those, because I enjoyed my romance with ECW and still fondly remember it. But
there is much to enjoy. That isn't part of it.
Yeah, the Dudleys was in ECW. If bear with me, that was a weird time, because I remember watching them and thinking like, "Whoa, the heat!" And yes, a lot of it was they were allowed to swear and they were allowed to go anywhere they wanted with the promos, just like calling children whores, and they would get heat, absolutely like blistering, where like the audience would be begging for these guys to die. At sometimes it would seem this is the thing, because
I think people forget how much of a shock it was when the Dudleys first became ECW tag team champions in the first place against the Eliminators.
Well, coming off the back of Dudley Dances with Dudley and all that, that, you know, that crock of shit. I don't disagree with you, Chase Hall. They did get mega heat, and I don't quite subscribe to this, oh, it's that traditional 70s 80s style heat. I think that's somewhat overblown. It's the bottom of the barrel heat. It's the cheapest. It's the pound land of cheap heat.
It's JBL cheap heat.
Absolutely. You know, to me, I just sit there and think, it doesn't take a lot of talent to get heat like that.
The amount of heat they would get, and how much the audience would want to see them get their ass kicked, and how pissed off they would be when they didn't get their ass kicked. And so that was great the first time I watched it. So after a while, I'll be honest, when I used to watch the ECW tapes, I kind of fast-forwarded a little bit through the Dudley matches just to get to the end, or if I saw some sort of great spot in the kind of fuzziness of the rewind or whatever, or fast-forward, I'd stop and okay, play that. That looks like they went for a flaming table. But, you know, because the rest of it would just be that's it, really. It's the same old, right up until they left. And I could also blame that because they didn't have, for me, a tag team like the Hardys or Edge and Christian had a little bit more kind of dynamic to them. My first viewing of the Dudleys was Royal Rumble 2000, which obviously put a lot for both Hardys and Dudleys, put them on the map for me, where the Hardys look like great risk takers, the Dudleys just look like fucking crash test dummies. With the emails that I mentioned in, they have won the tag titles in practically every company they've been in, and because of that, we won't go into the debate of the efficiency or the prestige of the TNA tag titles, but they have won belts in every company they've been in, which in terms of the record books, whether we like it or not, kind of puts them in there from the title wins perspective. I know it's a fake sport,
let's just be clear on this, and let's dispel this multiple title runs bit. Unless you want to speak to how good they were that a company put stock and prestige in them, I'll accept a remark about title runs in that context. In the context of what is a work, I will not accept that they held the belts here. They were 7-time ECW tag team champs. You know why they were 7-time ECW tag team champs or whatever the number was? Because loads of people fucking left and they were still there. They were like Edge and Christian in ECW. The belts went back to them. The belts had to go back to them. There was no fucker else to do it. You know, it's not completely irrelevant that they've held tag belts. Don't get me wrong. But people put far too much stock in how many belts a person has held when they want to make their argument, and the real, genuine, crucial evidence to support it isn't there.
Let's get to the third team in this triumvirate, the Hardy Boys, who got a few votes as well. Ratman from WrestlingForum says, I watched WCW over WWF in the Monday Night Wars. When WCW started to suck, I just stopped watching wrestling for a while. My friend watched the WWF and told me to watch it with him, so he rented a bunch of the pay-per-views at Blockbuster and ended up watching some of the Hardys, Edge, Christian, and Dudley's matches. I instantly became a Jeff fan for doing all the swantons off ladders. Matt was cool, but I thought Jeff was the shit. And yeah, the Hardys are one of the reasons I got back into watching wrestling. Wishbone from WrestlingForum says, for my favorite tag team, I'm gonna have to go with the Hardys. Always been a huge mark for them when they're together. I'm sure part of that is nostalgia since I grew up watching them, but they're still one of my all-time favorite acts in wrestling history. And I'm just a fan from TPWW Forum says, Jeff was always my favorite for his in-ring work, and I can remember hating it when Jeff swanton back into the cage instead of winning the titles at Survivor Series 2001. Their feuds with Edge and Christian and the Dudleys took tag team wrestling to new heights. I also enjoyed their later run and the feud with Eminem. Always seems like Jeff finds a way to screw things up for the team. I was enjoying them reunited in TNA, and they just became the champs and Jeff breaks his leg on a dirt bike. We'll get to the Hardys, because I was a huge Hardy Boys fan, and I think that Lita should be mentioned here as well. The act in general, the three of them, were really, really cool. Again, from that teenager perspective, which was the lens that I was looking at things through the time, Jeff Hardy, I thought, was going to be the future of wrestling. I honestly thought this guy, and hey, he ended up being a huge star in 2009. I thought this guy could be the next Shawn Michaels. He's that good. He had that weird, unique charisma to him. Matt was really good as well. What can you say about it? I mean, it's funny because this seems like the least in vogue opinion to have now. This kind of viewpoint that the Hardys are the all-time best tag team. It just seems like the internet would not be happy with this opinion, to be quite honest. But I do think that for the generation of the Attitude Era, this is the closest thing to the Rockers of the Rock and Roll Express. And I thought they did extremely, extremely well in the role. They were huge merchandise sellers. They were cool as fuck. They had so many great matches. I think they're a really good team. So I don't know. I'm kind of keen to see where you guys think they place all time. I did, and again, the second run too, which was mentioned there, when Jeff came back after his crystal meth addiction in 2003, and TNA run, not sure which one's worse. They had great matches with Edge and Orton, Cade and Murdoch, Eminem. They had some kick-ass matches. It's just like, this is a really, really quality tag team. All-time best, I don't know, but again, for me, this is up there for my all-time favourites. Maybe it's because I was a huge fan when I was younger, but even watching them now, I still get into it.
Yeah, I think the Hardys are a lot closer to Edge and Christian than they are the Dudleys in terms of this rating system I've got in my head. From a visual standpoint and from a spot-by-spot perspective, they were the best team of the three because, you know, they were stupid enough to do the silly things, in particular Jeff. Yeah, I said you absolutely can underestimate Lita within that promotional side of that group, really, because to have a woman out there who's, like, doing hurricanranas off ladders on, like, Christian and stuff, you know, that was absolutely fantastic as well. It added such a great dynamic to them, a very kind of a modern kind of 2000 feel to them, where they felt very fresh at the time.
Even the stuff like when they were wrestling Austin and Triple H, they could have done more with these guys. They were over enough.
I was always of the opinion that Hardy was the real worker of the team.
Which one?
I'm glad you went with it there. I was worried neither of you would say anything. I was always of the opinion that Matt Hardy was more of the classical worker of the team. And I always thought he was the better sort of quote-unquote ring general. It's a hard one for me to judge because I never thought they were bad, but I just...
You didn't like them.
I wasn't a big fan. And they did have some really good matches. Yeah, we can talk till the cows come home about the TLC and the first ladder match with Edge and Christian. And I will say, in terms of their second run, whilst there were some good matches, coming off the back of Jeff's return, I thought it was a bit of a disservice to Jeff, to be honest with that. But I didn't see any need to put them back together as a team.
No, neither did I. But I think they still came off like... pretty big stars,
and they did, don't get me wrong, but I just felt at that point it was that sort of back to the future, and Jeff at least had moved beyond that by that point to me.
But this is the period where you got DX and ECW kind of on the scene, so yeah, back to the future is pretty much the whole mantra of the company at the time.
Very much was, yeah.
Chuck's 4W from F4W says, for the sake of discussion, the Hardys, Dudleys, and Edge and Christian did more for the tag division than any of the individual teams did on their own for me. They made each other better. It's pretty hard to talk about any one of them without the others, as we've just proven. So while I wouldn't rank them among the best, I feel they all deserve to be talked about as a group. So would you kind of go along with that? Do you think the idea that any of these teams are the individual all-time best is kind of a hard argument to make because of that situation?
Yeah, I think the sort of the greater than the sum of their parts is very probably the most accurate way I can think to describe them.
Moving along now to the next of our picks. So Carl, the spotlight is on you. Tell us your pick for all-time favorite or all-time best. Which one are you going for here, and what team?
Well I picked this team on the basis of all-time favorite, but I do think you could make a case for all-time best as well. I've talked a lot about individuals meshing as a team and more the classical sense of workers. This will probably not come as too great a shock to people when I say the team I am picking is the backbone of the Horseman, the enforcer himself, Double A, and the little blasting cap that is Tully Blanchard. I absolutely love Arn and Tully. I watched promos for an hour before coming over to record this podcast just to get me in the mood. Now, look at it in terms of a package. Both guys could talk their asses off. And again, to G's point, they didn't have to scream and holler, though they often would when the time was right. They were articulate. They were concise. It wasn't rambling in their promos. When they said something, there was a clarity. It was just easy to buy. They had JJ with them, and I am a James J. Dillon fan. I know not everyone is, but I don't think they would have needed him from a promo standpoint. They were good enough by themselves. They could have carried it by themselves. And when it comes to bell to bell, we're talking crisp, polished performers. Arn already had a pedigree in tag team wrestling with his quote unquote cousin. Or brother, depending on which week it was and who was saying it over in Jim Crockett with Ole. Tully had his singles run prior as TV champion. You don't need me to go on about the number of great matches they had. Everybody knows how good these two were. They were a main, prominent part of Jim Crockett Promotions. Helped draw a ton of money as part of the Horseman Group. Yes, someone out there will say, well, Jim Crockett went out of business, they lost a lot of money. That was Jim Crockett being a shitty businessman. They drew houses, no one can deny that. The facts are there to support that. Going into WWF in a world where you could easily see them being lost in the shuffle or possibly buried because they weren't the cartoon characters of that time, they still shone through. They had an excellent manager in Bobby Heenan who just helped add a little bit of sizzle to the steak. And again, really good matches, in particular with the Rockers during the Rockers' introduction into the company. Again, you could possibly make the case, didn't have the longest stint together as a tag team. I think people probably think they were together longer than they actually were just because of the Horseman Association. A fantastic tag team which involved two stellar individuals who came together to produce an even more stellar tag team.
You're not the only person to think this, Carl, certainly. Air Aid from the UK fan forum chimes in with, "For me, the best tag team ever has to be Tully and Arn. People often think they were together for donkey's years, but they weren't actually partners for that long." There you go. "They assembled such a catalogue of fantastic matches, it feels like they dominated the sport for ages. Blanchard and Anderson were utterly amazing antagonists, and what made them was their intelligence and versatility. They were equally adept at being sneaky and infuriating, adopting hit-and-run tactics against guys like the Road Warriors or Demolition, as they were bullying or grinding down guys like the Rock and Rolls or Sean and Marty. I personally adored any time they were in the ring with the Hart Foundation, as they got to display both facets of their work, winding up and running from the anvil and beating the shit out of Brett. More than just the work bell to bell, however, Tully and Arn had an aura about them. They were the big fucking deal. Again, I imagine people think their title reigns were long and epic when actually they were fairly standard for the time, but that's down to the aura. As members of the Horsemen, they always gave you the impression that beating them was going to be as tough as wrestling the big belt from Flair. I just buy that you can't beat these two guys, they're that good. People like to talk about when the WWF tag team division was amazing and the tag belts meant something, but in the time period for American wrestling that I'm most into and most familiar with, the WWF never put on regular tag team main events that sparkled like Arn and Tully defending the world tag team titles for Jim Crockett." And a blue guy from Pro Wrestling Only also says, "Tully and Arn. I think even Bret Hart once conceded that Arn and Tully put together all the best elements from previous Southern tag teams. Not only were they technically sound, but I'd say that they were easily the best talking tag team ever. The only strike against them is they didn't have the longevity of some of the other top-notch teams like the Road Warriors or the Funks."
Sorry, folks, I'm going to go back to my list here because these guys are number two on my list, and it's a very, very close second, Carl, on this one. I think the only reason why I'd give Hart Foundation to the edge on them is because I was fans of them when I was a kid.
Don't worry, you don't have to defend yourself to me. That's for God to decide.
My kind of fandom of them came later on. When I got back into wrestling, I became an instant fan of Arn Anderson through watching him being the right hand man of Ric Flair. So in my eyes, it was always kind of like Arn Anderson and Ric Flair, even though they weren't necessarily an official tag team. I always saw them as a team together. I didn't actually know, and this sounds ridiculous now, I didn't know of Tully Blanchard's existence until much later. I remember watching a show, and I knew Rick, I knew Dad very well. I even heard of Barry Windham and JJ Dillon, and I heard of everyone. And then Tully Blanchard came on, and I'd never heard of this guy before. And seeing him where he was a little different to Arn, because Arn was very kind of grounded in what his persona was, while Tully was a lot closer to Ric Flair, actually, in terms of like the big bombast and like the suits and the kind of grandeur and the glamour of it and so on. He was like, for that time, he was a small guy who was roughing it up with everybody, hitting like slingshot suplexes on people. And I was like, whoa, this guy's interesting. Found out that he was actually in a tag team with Arn. It was like, well, now my mind's blown. So now I got to watch this stuff. And so you're saying, like, with Bobby the Brain adding sizzle to the steak, I think that steak was already sizzling. I'd say that he was the fucking mustard. I'd say, like, you already got this sizzling steak, you're ready to go, you got your knife and fork, and he turned around and said, would you like something extra on that? I want some fucking mustard, please. Bam, there's Bobby Heenan there, just to add that mustard to it. Those two can talk. And I mean really talk, okay? More so than just the ramblings of madmen like freaking Hogan or whatever, where they're just like, yeah, just tell me something, brother. The thing I absolutely love the most about them is when you were talking about them being tag champions, when they're holding the belts in their hands and they're promoting them, the thing I love most was what they articulated most was the business of professional wrestling and the business of holding the belts. It wasn't just the thing of like, oh, look at me, got a belt. Yeah, I'm the best and so on. I love how they just said, this is the business right here. Do you realise what it means by me holding this belt? Do you know what it means, what I can buy because I'm holding this belt? I can buy this, I can buy that. Look at my watch. You know, Flair did the exact same thing with the world title. He goes, look what I can buy with this. Because this is the business right here. This is what makes a difference in your life. It's the title belt. It's not necessarily these wins and losses every now and again where you get a little bit of money here and there. The money's in the title. If you want to earn money, you gotta be us, because we're the fucking money now. And that's what was so great about these two, and I fucking love them. And it's only because of childhood exuberance over Hart Foundation that they're above them.
As brief as their run is, comparatively speaking to other teams that we've mentioned, in terms of pure quality and the individuals and the matches they had, I love this team. Matches with the Road Warriors, matches with Luger and Windham, matches with Sting and Nikita at the Bash is a really good match. Matches against Dusty and whoever he wanted to team with at the time. Hart Foundation, Rockers, Jesus Christ, the list goes on and on.
And a forgotten one that's not mentioned that often is the little mini feud with the Midnights.
Very brief. I think they had the match in Philadelphia, and that's pretty much it. There is a tape of that floating around. The first time I ever saw Tully Blanchard at the Survivor Series in 1988, when he does that, because I hated Tully. I fucking hated Tully Blanchard.
Is it the tag?
It's the tag.
It's great.
It's the mincing across the ring and tagging out because I think it's Warlord or Barbarian that's in the ring on the other side. And it's just like, God damn, I hate this Tully Blanchard guy. And then, of course, again, the more you learn, the more you understand. This guy is so outstanding. There's nothing more I can say about the Brainbusters that I think you guys already have. So we'll leave it there and we'll move on for another candidate here. Gordon the Gopher from UK Fan Forum says, gun to my head, the Brainbusters are the best. But for favourite, I have to go with my heart on this one and say Demolition. You never forget your first love. The look, the music, the style, axe and smash, take it from me. And Arrogantly Grateful from Wrestling Forum also says Demolition. I love the way that they worked, and it felt it was very unique the way that they would wear down their opponents. For some reason, it always reminded me of chopping down a tree where they just hammer and hammer their opponents to the ground with axe handles, and they'd just be getting further and further down to the canvas until they were completely worn out. I always preferred axe of the two, and much preferred axe and smash as a duo rather than axe smash and crush or smash and crush. Nothing against him, but for me it's always been axe and smash. I love their finisher also, and I like their look, and they had such a badass theme, which I think is very hard to argue with. Demolition's a really good candidate here. I can't honestly say best, but they're a very underrated tag team, I think, at the same time, and I do have a fondness from a favourites perspective for Demolition. Just as a kid, man, they were fucking cool.
I absolutely loved them as a kid. I still think they hold up very well now. It's, in many ways, it's unfair, because you see the attire, you see the face paint, and the time period in which they came along, and they're, in my opinion, unfairly labelled as Road Warrior knockoffs.
Which is actually something that we didn't mention with the Road Warriors that we probably should have, which is in terms of influence and the template formula. And there's another team like this that I'm sure that we'll get to, where there were so many imitators spawned, and Demolition, maybe in its original conception, was, but certainly its legacy probably shouldn't be that.
No, it shouldn't be that, but I think they are looked upon that way by a large section of the wrestling public. But again, I think that does them a disservice. They were an excellent team in their own right. Better workers than the Road Warriors. I don't think there's many people that would argue that. Their promo style was more of the shouting and over the top sort of cartoonish element that you'd expect of the, as was the style at the time. but again, very convincing talkers. They reference it, the music. You know, you can have a lot
which
of...
Which may have to close the show.
You can have a lot of bland entrance music from the 80s. In theirs is an intro that you remember. And it's absolutely brilliant. Whilst the emailer doesn't have anything against Crush, I personally do. I also was not a fan when he was added to the team. Was certainly not a fan of the Smash Crush incarnation where they had Mr. Fuji back as the manager.
Inexplicably.
Yeah. But by and large, I can put that to one side and just remember that sort of glorious period from 87 through to sort of midway point of 90 where, you know, they had a lot of good matches with the Hart Foundation. I actually quite enjoy the match with Strikeforce at Mania.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why. Again, I don't have the greatest explanation for it, but I just liked that sense of you going into the match thinking Demolition are clearly going to win. But it was that sort of that fighting from underneath style babyface sort of thing that I didn't think was an, you know, sort of a classic match. I at least appreciated the sort of the story to it.
Yeah, that's one of the things with Demolition that I think gets overlooked, because again, they have the template of very simple big man tag team in many ways. They made a lot of those young, those smaller babyface teams fight really hard to get anything. I mean, there's a great match with the Rockers in MSG, and I want to say 88. It is 88, where they barely take any bumps the whole match. I mean, they don't bump for anything until the very end. They make teams fight for what they have, but in terms of the pure mechanics from a kayfabe standpoint of what a tag team should be doing, what they do is so completely solid. And I will say, so from that perspective, I really do think Demolition hold up quite well in hindsight. But curiously, one of the acts during that period of time in the WWF that had such a long run of prominence that gets no respect at all today, which is just weird. They don't hark back on any kind of Demolition nostalgia or anything like that, because they were during a period of time where they were loaded with quality tag teams. Demolition were the backbone of the division.
We mentioned, to use a more modern analogy with Edge and Christian there and holding the belts, Demolition was the same. The belts always came back to them.
Three-time champs.
You know, over the course of what from 88 to 90. Yes, they lost the belts briefly to the Brainbusters and also the Colossal Connection.
But they did not get a vote for the best tag team of all time, just so you know.
Shocking. Absolutely shocking. But no, they were very much... They were the hub of the division, and the belts were with them for a reason.
I really liked Demolition. I liked them considerably more than Legion of Doom in retrospect. And from that standpoint, it could be considered a bad gimmick, potentially, because you're having to replicate someone else.
Especially to that point, G, especially when the attire makes you look like a couple of juiced up gimps.
Yeah, absolutely. But to absolute their credit, they made it work. Leaned more towards Axe because I just liked his kind of like the voice and so on. It's a great graspy voice.
Yeah.
It's just like
yourself, Carl.
It's like he literally just ate an entire tobacco harvest, you know, just before he started talking in the promos. Like as you said, with the rockers and so on, they really didn't give anything to anyone, and I mean that outside of the work as well. They just like just watching the match, they just beat them down to a pulp. And they were so effective as this dominant tag team. I didn't have necessarily anything against the gimp outfits or anything like that, because I just thought it actually, if anything, it was more homage to Mad Max 2 and Giant Humongous and his attire. I think their tag run is pretty much almost borderline forgotten in terms of like they always, when you talk about that time period, they always mention Hart Foundation, they always mention the Rockers, but they just don't really mention Demolition as much.
Batco 10 from Wrestling Forum with a good candidate here. The Fabulous Kangaroos were the team that captured the imagination of wrestling fans everywhere and propelled the concept of tag team wrestling to the forefront of the sport. They combined their heel persona and dirty tactics with a superior technical wrestling ability to create such heat that they started more riots than the Dusk Riot Squad could dream of. Al Costello was ahead of his time in marketing this team. They would march down the aisles towards the ring, dressed in their Australian military jackets and hats, carrying the large, genuine wooden boomerangs. Managed by Wal Red Berry, they would lead the procession carrying an Australian banner while the recording of Waltzing Matilda was played over the loudspeakers. Today's fans should keep in mind that back in the day, wrestlers didn't make their entrance to music. Entrance music was unheard of, and the Fabulous Kangaroos were one of the first to use entrance music, if not the first. The Fabulous Kangaroos were consummate heels whose combination of dirty tactics, superior technical wrestling ability, and unique gimmick popularized tag team wrestling more than any other team in the history of the game. An interesting pick here, this is a team that was formed in 1957 over there, Al Costello and Roy Heffernan. In terms of a team that was maybe the first true like, tag team that went around territorial wise, for those of you who don't know much about the Fabulous Kangaroos, they're actually in a great book that I've recently purchased by Greg Oliver and Stephen Johnson called The Tag Teams, where they were actually listed as the best tag team in wrestling history. But they're just mentioned as a team that went everywhere, you know, territorially speaking. They went to California, New York. They started in Stampede with Stu. Interesting team in the sense, again, purely Australian gimmick, true heels. I mean, there's a story in the book about how they're in Winnipeg and they started a riot and they went into the ring to seek refuge from the fans, and the fans just decided to set fire to the ring apron to try and smoke them out. So this is serious real heat here. This is the kind of stuff the Dudleys wish they were able to do. Another story of the second incarnation, I believe, of the Fabulous Kangaroos, where they created such heat they had to sleep in a dumpster to get away from all the fans that were pissed off and trying to kill them. So I mean, this is serious stuff with the Fabulous Kangaroos. Honestly can't say that I've ever seen much of them outside of YouTube. I haven't been exposed to them, so in terms of favourite of all time best tag team, I can't really say that much. All I know about them is from what I've read and the limited amount that I've seen, but a very interesting candidate, and I'm very glad that they were brought up. Right, moving on now to another candidate, Ole Anderson 89 from Wrestling Forum says the British Bulldogs, just an explosive combination. No other tag team in the past or present can work a match with that pace, technical skills, intensity and psychology. Made tag team wrestling big in the WWF to the point that people wanted tag matches with the Bulldogs and the Hart Foundation to close the show. And Iron Sheik from the UK Fan Forum says the British Bulldogs had everything apart from the ability to string two words together on the mic. In the ring, however, they were mesmerising. The British Bulldogs, what a team.
Yeah, it's very nice as Englishmen or as British people to have a team in this conversation. It's very nice to have that.
Just wearing your England shirt.
Not great stick men by any means, but fantastic in the ring. People sort of wax lyrical about how good Dynamite Kid was, and you see it, and he is just as good as everyone has ever said he was in his prime. It's funny when you think of the dearth of tag teams now, yeah, and what passes for a tag division. You look back at the WWF in that mid to late 80s period, and the teams that are there, not necessarily all at the same time, but there was always someone there of relevance. If it's the Bulldogs and the Hart Foundation, You've got Demolition, the Brain Busters, you know, the Rockers, you know. And I could go on, but it's just, you think of that time period and the number of great teams that were there. And in many ways, it's quite depressing to think
it's
about.
It's very depressing.
But it's you know, it's nice that they got an honourable mention. They were a premier team of the 80s.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, you're kind of talking about the team dynamics. I love, you know, Ball. I mean, because they're both brick shit houses anyway. Dynamite wrestled, much like Benoit, I copied him, as a guy who's above the size that he really was anyway, with the snap suplexes and everything like that. So great matches. You're talking about the perspective of the modern day. The fact that this team, it took them a year to put the belts on the Bulldogs, because they got over really quick. Yeah. They got over so fast on the TV, so by just destroying these jobbers in incredibly impressive fashion and doing moves that we hadn't seen before and stuff like that.
Including one Cactus Jack Foley.
Very, very good. Really, I mean, damn good. But I wouldn't say all-time best.
It's kind of funny because when we were talking about the Hardys, Dudleys, and Edge and Christian, you know, they were mentioning about how good the tag division was at that time, you know, and there was a lot of good tag teams in the Attitude Era, but man, it pales in comparison to that late 80s era, that golden era tag team wrestling. I think, yeah, I wouldn't put them in the best. I think they would be probably in most people's top 10. Bulldog was great at what he did, and Dynamite Kid was absolutely excellent. Had brought a dog with him to the ring, which always was just cool. He's got like a bit of a frown for me, but
it was the 80s.
I know, but Jesus. Leave the bitch at home. But it's just it's just this thing of like,
Jesus.
but the problem was with that tag team and with their style was that, I mean, well, look where they both are now. Like their lifestyles and the wrestling that they did for that team isn't actually great, you know.
Moving on to another team now. Daisy Jane from WrestlingForum.com says, "The Rockers. They were the first team I saw on the WWF. I thought they were amazing, the way they moved around the ring, the high-flying moves, and of course, the great outfits. Rockers are a team that are very, very high on my list, not just because Shawn Michaels is a part of it, but when I look at this team, and I just think of, God, that so many great matches these guys had. Dating back to the AWA, the great matches with Buddy Rose and Doug Summers, which I really like. Got Orient Express at the Rumble, the matches with the Hearts, the matches with the Brain Busters, the best Powers of Pain match you'll ever see is against the Rockers in Madison Square Garden, the one I mentioned earlier on with Demolition. To me, the Rockers are just able to bring out so much good in so many different teams, and one of the things that really kind of holds them back in terms of being considered the best is that they were never on top in the WWF when they were there in the big time, if you will. They were amongst many teams all fighting for the top spot, and they never got to the very top. Damn the top rope. But even then, they were going to be transitional to Power and Glory, from what I understand, anyway. So it wasn't something where they were really going to be the anchor team of the division. Don't know whether you want to hold that against them or not, but in terms of pure work, in terms of pure favourites, man, they had so many good matches with so many different types of opponents. And even though you want to make the case very similar in terms of styles, God, Sean could just fucking sell his ass off, and Marty could too. They could both bump, both just amazing wrestlers.
Yeah, they were amazing workers, and always surprised that they didn't, even though it would have in theory been a transitional run to Power and Glory, I was always surprised they never got the belts once, at least once. They were because of the way I saw these things at the time, they were the first team I saw where the double teams were really sort of the proficient method of attack, so to speak. You know, there weren't many teams where I saw that as being really prevalent. There were teams that would have signature moves, whether it be a few that G listed with the Hart Foundation, or Demolition having the Decapitation Elbow, or the Doomsday Device for Road Warriors. And it was very much, as you can say, it was lifted from the Rock and Roll Express in large part. But
and to many, that might hold them back on this kind
possibly,
of list as well.
Possibly. But as I saw them, before I saw the Rock and Roll Express, it was seeing them do it was very much an eye-opener to me at the time. A very enjoyable team. You can't say they had many bad matches apart from maybe if they'd spent a bit too much time on the Source, perhaps.
Moving at you, WrestleMania 6.
Yeah. But there may have been some powder before the match as well as during that match. But no, a really enjoyable team.
I think back to the Rockers, I just think so many teams, I think, had their best match with the Rockers. I think some of the best tag matches I've ever seen in the WWF are Rockers matches with so many different teams.
And unfortunately, if you're wanting to make the case for the Rockers, a lot of them are matches that weren't necessarily on TV or weren't on the biggest shows.
Agreed.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. As a kid, I didn't really buy into the Rockers. that much.
That's why the double teams were so prevalent.
Team specialists.
Yeah, it was just I said, you know, like a broken record, but it was all about the Hart Foundation for me. So I never really bought into them. It was only when, like, kind of older and going back and watching them, and in particular, I'll give you the actual match which made it for me. It was that Royal Rumble 91 match against the Orient Express, where you watch it again and you just think, like, man, that stuff was really innovative for the time. It really was, and it's really great to watch. And I think, like, yeah, they definitely had a lot more range to them than a lot of the other tag teams, because they were able to do some really exciting, fast pace kind of matches when they were facing against you know, people like the Hart Foundation. But I think they really came into their own, ironically, when they faced the big teams, the powerhouse teams. And this is where they usually come up against the problems, because the powerhouse teams didn't want to face them because they were too small and didn't think that they could get any heat off them. That's at least what the stories are. But, like, once they got in the matches, that's when the Rockers really came to their own as being the underdogs against these big teams. You mentioned Powers of Pain, a really good match against Bossman and Akeem as well.
Mania 5. It's very much that sort of the analogy going there. It's very much the sort of the cat and mouse element, isn't it?
Again, watch that match with Demolition. I recommend it to everybody, because I actually think it's on the WWE Network on a 1988 house show. The one that's on there, it's that match. But fucking hell, that match is great.
It was just great. There were great bumpers, and it just took a little bit of time for me to appreciate them, to get over the Hart Foundation bubble, I guess.
Moving on to some more great teams, man. We got so many teams to get to, and none of these are ones that I think are completely awful candidates. Tenise Sarway, and I hope I've said your name right there, from Pro Wrestling Only. Mine is the Midnight Express, the Eaton and Lane version. I love this team, mainly because they have awesome matches and they complement each other very well. The pretty boy martial artist who wants all the women, paired with the stoic high flyer who can throw a mean right hand with a loud mouth carrying a tennis racket. I'm a big mark for Bobby Eaton, one of wrestling's truly underrated performers. One match of theirs that I never get tired of watching is the match against the Southern Boys the Great American
Hell
Bash,
yeah!
1990. Fraser B from the UK Fan Forum says, I'm going to put in a mention for the Midnight Express team of Eaton and Lane. They were a brilliant, innovative heel team, had fantastic feuds and matches with the Rock and Rolls, the Road Warriors, the Fantastics, the Horsemen, Dusty Rhodes, the original Midnights, and others. They also benefited from having Jim Cornette in the corner at a time when he genuinely was one of the best managers around. What's more, they were half of perhaps my favourite tag team match ever with the Southern Boys at the Great American Bash 1990. Vitor from the Wrestling Forum also chimes in with these two, the Eaton and Lane incarnation, and say they are the answer to both questions for me. They had great chemistry together, cool double team moves out the wazoo, multiple sweet finishes, and were awesome whether they were heel or face. Cornette and their epic entrance theme are just icing on the cake. I love the Midnights, man. God, what a team.
Yeah, I was expecting to hear this team's name at some point, whether it be through one of ourselves around the table or from the emails. Yeah, there's not much I can add there that hasn't been raised by the emails. I absolutely love the match with the Southern Boys. I'll give an old shout out to the old SNS crew of Ryan Ward and Carl Ross for pointing me in the direction of that match. Always been grateful for that. A really fantastic match. But they had so many.
Rock and Rolls at Wrestle
Rock
War.
And Rolls at
Fantastics
Wrestle War.
At the first Clash. Pillman and Zeng. Yeah, so many.
So many, and they were so crisp in the ring. I mean, and although it was more Eaton and Lane that was mentioned there, you know, Condry and Eaton as well. We're another great incarnation. We don't need to go into too much detail about Jim Cornette. Everyone knows how great Jim Cornette is on the stick, and just in general, a brilliant human being, in my opinion. And in terms of making the argument for the best, they were a significant draw, which I'm sure that Liam, as being a, we'll call you our resident Mid-South expert, can elaborate on.
Yeah, well, 1984 was the best year of Mid-South business ever, and it was based on I believe. I mean, and there were many strong elements to Mid-South in 1984. The push of Magnum TA was a big deal. JYD had a lot of juice in it, you know, a lot of gas in the tank as a draw as well at this time. Bill Watts' comeback at the Last Stampede was because for the first 4 months of the year, they'd ramped up so much heat on Jim Cornette and the Midnights. Mainly with Cornette at the forefront, obviously, doing the great promos. Man, they were so hot as heels. They just stand out like a sore thumb in Mid-South, and they were just such a great team. Drew great money. It's an interesting thing to talk about, Eaton and Condry versus Eaton and Lane, because they were two very different teams with two very different intentions. Condry and Eaton with Cornette were obviously the team that was supposed to draw. They were put in main events, and they were responsible for doing it from record numbers in Mid-South. Night of the Skywalkers, you know, again, they were on a national level responsible for drawing big money on Starcade with the Road Warriors. But yeah, at the same time though, when the dynamic changed completely as the member changed from Condry to Lane, because by that point they were firmly, I want to say mid-card, because that seems somewhat demeaning, but they were never featured as a headline act, in my opinion, the same way they were as Condry and Eaton. They were booked very, very differently to be pretty much the show-stealing heel tag team, and they were great in that role. So it's kind of two different elements. I prefer the Eaton and Lane combinations because I think that that kind of version of wrestling really holds up better over time. The great double team moves, the divorce court, because it doesn't just separate the shoulder, it divorces it. The Vegematic, because it slices and dices. The rocket launcher. So, I mean, they were just fucking cool, man. And the thing with that match with the Southern Boys, which I just mentioned there, and obviously has a lot of love, and rightfully so, in my opinion. They're heels in Baltimore, but man, they're not heels in Baltimore. They're over like baby faces, and it's great to watch. Lane's just fucking so charismatic in that match.
Yeah, I mean, when going back and forth between favorite and best, I was thinking of talking about the Midnights as being best. In terms of Lane and Eaton, which is the version I'm more familiar with, Lane was a good wrestler in his own right, and by also, I think, and this isn't a mock on Condry at all, but I think Lane also brought a look with him as well, brought a more established look, and I don't want to put blame on Condry, or even Eaton really for that matter, but like a lot more kind of clean look, you know, he was a relatively handsome chap, relatively good physique on him as well.
Yeah, I think it's very much a case of when you transition from Eaton and Condry to Eaton and Lane, it's more aesthetically pleasing, so to speak.
To me, they look more like a team. Because Condry has his own style. He's got he's got the bandana around the neck at times. He's got the bandana around the knee at times. You know, in Mid-South, different colour tights and stuff like that. Just the little touches like that. When it's Lane and Eaton with Connor at the helm, they look more like a solid unit.
And Lane has got the look.
This sounds like a roundabout way of saying Stan Lane's prettier than Dennis Condry.
Which is the exact point. So personally, I'll go with Lane as well, but there can easily be an argument. And as you said, there's so many great matches. But
Seth 82 from TPWW forums for the best tag team, pretty much cheated and said the Midnight Express or the Rock and Roll Express. These two teams were just absolutely amazing in the 80s in the South. Sold out many buildings and brought a huge fan following everywhere. Plus you had Jim Cornette as the mouthpiece for the Midnights, who drew major heat in Mid-South. Fans wanted to kill him down there. Gok from Pro Wrestling Only says, my pick for the best would probably be the Rock and Roll Express. Amazing longevity. Unfortunately, their gimmick just looked really dated after 1988 or so, and that kind of hurt their ability to work in WCW and the WWF. They were still great in Smoky Mountain, though, and definitely helped keep that promotion alive as long as it did. The promotion was pretty much built around the Rock and Rolls in the early years. The list of teams that they had good matches with is probably as long or longer than any other team's list. So the Rock and Roll Express, who are now Wrestling Observer Hall of Famers, and one of Steve Austin's favourite tag teams too, Carl, I'll have you know, are nominated here. What are your thoughts on Ricky and Rob? Because I've seen a lot of them, and I've always kind of thought that it was really humorous that Robert Gibson was placed as a teen idol. Yeah. I've always thought that was kind of
like
funny.
Yeah. His armpit.
Ricky Morton, I can at least understand because he looks like he's about 12 years old when he first comes into Mid-South.
Yeah, arguably.
Great workers, though.
Great workers.
Ricky, especially.
In Ricky Morton, you've got arguably the greatest seller of all time.
I don't know. I think that's I always think that's a little bit of a push.
Jing is a bit overblown.
He's very, very good, don't get me wrong, but there's a lot of guys. When I look at, and again, a lot of people won't like this comparison. When I look at Shawn Michaels and the Rockers, he's excellent too.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily argue with that. Like I mentioned before, the Rockers were the first team I saw really sort of hammer home this point of sort of tandem offense. But the Rock and Roll Express were the team in my mind, and you can probably correct me if I'm wrong here. In many respects, they were the team that invented it.
Didn't say it before, but the British Bulldogs deserve a lot of credit in that regard as well.
Again, they're a team that had a lot of fantastic matches. Most notably with the Midnights throughout the country. When you think of their greatest matches of the two teams, they're so intertwined in that sense. So I can see why someone would go with that.
Great matches with the Andersons too.
Yeah. That being said, my earliest memories of the Rock and Roll Express were actually when they were wrestling in WWF, when they were doing the occasional Smoky Mountain match. I think Survivor Series 93 is the one that springs to mind. So I didn't really see them at their peak at the time. But when I think of best teams, Maybe because I didn't grow up watching them, maybe that hurts them a little bit. But
yeah.
But they're not a team that instantly springs to mind.
God, Jesus Christ, it's go crazy for both of them. If you see them after the Rockers, the way I did...
It doesn't matter which girl, you know, all of them thought that Gibson was looking at them.
Moving on now to a couple of very interesting picks, very attitude-y picks here. Bad News Girl from TPWW says, The Acolytes. Okay, The Acolytes got a lot of votes. They got more votes than The Rockers, believe it or not. I've always been a huge Bradshaw fan, and these two were just two beer-drinking, cigar-smoking, badass motherfuckers. I'll never forget The Acolytes versus The Hardys and Michael Hayes at Fully Loaded, where Bradshaw clotheslined Jeff Hardy out of midair while attempting to hit the poetry in motion. That's the match that got me hooked on this team. Smelly Meatball from TPWW also says, The APA. Unlike other teams, they didn't need the tag belts to be seen as a great team, while being a perfect fit as the muscle for a group and whenever someone needed a situation handled. And a Phoenix 20192 from FOW also says, The APA is awesome. The idea of two tough guys just beating people up, knowing they can do so, and simply working for a flat rate as protection amuses me and makes them feel genuine. Plus, their backstage segments were funny with a so-called office. My favourite moments of them were not even really the tag matches themselves, but mostly the brawls that would ensue and somebody would pay them to provide protection. I can't say best tag team for these two guys at all, but... as a novelty team and a very time and place tag team for the Attitude Era, I can certainly see them being a very fun act.
Oh, they don't get me wrong, they were a fun act, and if anyone can relate to beer drinkers, I certainly can. And I did enjoy the skits in the back with the door for an office sort of thing. And but that being said, as entertaining as I found those skits, and as legitimate as the beatdowns looked, and in many cases were, sincerely, Public Enemy, I can't think of many matches that I enjoyed. To be a really good tag team, or even to me, to be an enjoyable tag team, you've got to be able to go bell to bell, or at least be solid bell to bell. And I saw them have so many matches that just stunk. I mean, the email I referenced, the Hardy Boys and Michael Hayes one. That, yeah, that's a cool spot when Jeff Hardy gets clotheslined, but everything that's leading up to it is a shower of shit.
This is one of those ones where I think the Acolytes were perfectly cast the way they were, and if they'd have actually done any more, they'd have been completely overexposed. I remember when they did the match at Fully Loaded with Edge and Christian, I remember just dreading the idea of them being tag team champions during that year, when you've got Edge and Christian, the Hardys and the Dudleys all fighting for the top spot. It's like, the Acolytes... I
genuinely thought they were going to win that night.
Yeah, me too, because it was in Dallas. So I was convinced with the Bradshaw tie-in. Thankfully not.
No. As we don't have a camera for this, G slapped his hand.
Iginfest from TPWW Forum says, easily the New Age Outlaws.
Bullshit.
Oh, you didn't know?
Don't see how there can even be another choice. I caught one or two matches of theirs when they came back last year, and they were still comfortably the most entertaining people out there. Zebra Kid Mark from UK Fan Forum says, New Age Outlaws without a doubt. I love their tag run. I love their singles run when they were IC and hardcore champions. Everything about them I loved. I loved when they beat the Dust Brothers last year, and hated when they lost to the Ascension this year. New Age Outlaws, interesting. This is obviously going to get a lot of votes because they were the premier tag team during a very popular year in the company. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts with these two. Billy Gunn is so much better in a tag team, it's not even funny. And Road Dogg, as the charismatic mouthpiece of the act, is fantastic.
They have a time and place. They were super over. Road Dogg was very charismatic. Billy Gunn, as you say, as we saw from his multiple failed singles pushes, was always far better in a tag team.
Yeah, we could be explosive in short bursts.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were part of a really hot group in DX. When I think of the New Age Outlaws, Screams is very much smoke and mirrors. Neither of them, in my mind, were particularly good workers. They will acknowledge that themselves. I can't think of many particularly good matches they've had. In fact, off the top of my head, I can't think of any good matches.
Don't like the dumpster match?
It's, and I say this as a huge Mick Foley fan, it's okay. You know, it's not bad, but it's nothing to write home about either.
Okay.
And it's just, I just look at them and think, they're a team to me that just screams criminally overrated.
Okay.
In the wider context, I don't see how they can even remotely be considered one of the best tag teams.
Okay, fair enough. What do you think about the idea that they were the most popular tag team of the Attitude Era?
Absolutely.
I think that's where a lot of this
comes
from.
Absolutely. In that sense, I can see the logic. Whilst they don't personally speak to me, I can see the logic in that sense. I grant you there.
Yeah. Them and the Hardys for me would be battling for the top spot in terms of popularity over that kind of 3-year period, but I can certainly see all the Outlaws.
Absolutely agree with everything you both said.
Moving along, anybody Thriller
Ben Sitter.
Anybody Thriller from TPWW Forum says, Owen Hart and the British Bulldog are probably my personal favourite tag team, and they might have been the most talented as well. Owen was a great technician with a big personality, while the Bulldog was the muscle and was no technical slouch either. Their matches were always solid, and the fact that they were related lent to their credibility as partners. Maybe a bit of a longer run as a team would have had people talking about them more often in this type of conversation, but I'm very pleased with the catalogue that they did provide. Dogs from WrestlingForum.com also says, my personal favourite team is Davey and Owen. They were a perfect mix of strength and athleticism, and made the titles feel important at a time with a not-so-strong division.
Not-so-strong division is an incredible understatement.
Yeah, Smoking Guns, Godwins, New Rockers, Body Donners.
New Blackjacks.
New Blackjacks.
Headbangers.
The Godwins again as heels.
Ugh.
LOD. They did have a great match with Austin and Michaels on Raw. That's a fantastic match. One of the best tag matches of the decade, now that I think about it. But
They fall into that category of a team that complement each other very well. You know, not that I'm calling them as good as the Hart Foundation by any means, or as significant as the Hart Foundation at all, but it's that similar sort of meshing. I think British Bulldog's an infinitely better worker than Jim Neidhart, just for the record. but
bold statement, Carl.
Yeah, I'm sticking my neck out there. But they were a team that meshed and worked well, and they did have some good matches. I particularly enjoy the matches with Furnace and Lafon.
Yeah.
Bearing that in mind, whilst they were a tag team, there was never any emphasis on them as a team, really, was there?
You think so?
As quickly as they were together, they were always playing this undercurrent of
dissension.
Their dissension and splitting them up, and, you know, Bulldog getting thrown out by Owen at the Rumble, and Owen being jealous that he's the European champion, so he has his two slammies, and you've got that great little clip that they showed a few times when they sort of look back retrospectively at Owen Hart, where he just dives under Bulldog's arms when he's flexing the muscles, and Owen just dives under and he's got the two slammies out there. Really great little scene. But they were always teasing that dissension. There was never this real emphasis on them as a team or on the division, and I think that, combined with how short a run it was, hurts them a little bit.
Yeah, they acknowledge it's personal favourite more than best. I think in terms of the best, it's a hard argument to make for those reasons. Jerry Von Kramer from Pro Wrestling Only says, the Funks complement each other's characters very well. Terry is fire, Dory is ice. Terry's the life of the party, Dory's no nonsense. Terry's the madness, Dory's the method, and they'll both kick your ass. Just such a cool and legendary team who should be number one contenders in this discussion. They were arguably bigger stars than the Road Warriors. They were together longer than Arn and Tully. Unlike some teams, they were a proper team. They have great matches, great feuds, and many amazing moments. Funk Brothers is a candidate here. Very interesting. Tag team champions in Texas and Georgia and Florida and Japan. Huge runs. In Japan especially is where they really kind of stack up a great body of work. The matches with the Sheik and Abdullah the Butcher, the brawls are fantastic there. Matches with Jumbo Tsuruta and Giant Baba are really good as well. The matches with Stan Hansen and various opponents as well. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of people whose only exposure to these two is their brief run in the WWF as Hoss.
Yes, and therein lies my problem. You know, as much as I enjoy that match from WrestleMania 2, it's not enough to really give an opinion on the body of work.
Dorho 5 from Pro Wrestling Only. Three words: the Holy Demon Army. Kawada and Tawei are my best and favourite tag team ever. Also, perhaps the coolest Japanese team of all time. They were both great at being their characters, which only makes the team work better because their characters have a lot in common. They are not traditional American heels, but they definitely have the win-at-all-costs mentality. Also, there are very few teams out there that are as fun to watch when they start kicking the shit out of somebody. A great candidate here, and this will tie into my personal pick, for the team that I am kind of on the fence of whether they're favourite or the best, but the team that I certainly hold in extremely high regard is Mitsuhara Misawa and Kenta Kobashi, which didn't get a nomination anywhere else, and I want to mention him here just because I firmly believe that the best tag team matches of all time that I've ever seen are Misawa and Kobashi against Tawei and Kawada. I think those matches are fantastic. The one on June 9th, 1995, I want to say is my personal pick for the favourite one, where Kobashi has the injured leg. It's just such, if you could put a perfect blueprint of an awesome tag team match on a piece of paper, it would be this match. The dynamic of the Misawa-Kobashi team, and the reason why it's my personal favourite, is because Misawa's the ace of the company at the time. He's clearly the guy that is there based on skill. He's kind of the franchise player and everybody knows it. On the other side, you got Kawada, who's trying to knock him down. He's always one step behind. He's trying to beat him. Kobashi, as Misawa's partner, is kind of the junior member of the team, so to speak. He's huge, but he comes off like he's all heart. He's got such great facial expressions, such great fire. The match that I was referencing before on June the 9th, 95, is so great because Kobashi's got the injured hamstring, and they just, Kawada and Tawei, great as heels, just beating the shit out of Kobashi. And then as they've got Misawa in trouble and beating him, Kobashi crawling over and kind of diving on top of Misawa to make sure that they can't get to him, and then pulling him off. And then finally Kawada powerbombs Misawa, pins him finally after years of trying to beat Misawa. Such a great story, such a great climax. And not even the climax, they would go on to do further matches in the future. They're tag team champions on two occasions. Great matches against almost everybody they wrestle. I love this team. I've never seen two guys... Because the thing is, they were both great wrestlers in their own right. We mentioned before about Edge and Christian being world champions individually. Obviously, so were the Funk Brothers. They were the NWA champion.
And everyone is acutely aware of the success of both Misawa and Kobashi.
Exactly. So okay, to me, it's a great melding. It's the way that Old Japan worked, where they had the top guys who could also be in a tag team and kind of cement them as a duo. I just when I think of the most complete tag team and the best matches I've ever seen in a tag team format, I think of Misawa and Kobashi, and I think that kind of tips it over the scales for me. Can't say personal favorite because I watched a lot of their matches long after the fact. It'd be 1999 and 2000 when I started getting to see the stuff from the mid 90s. Best, certainly for me. I mean, in terms of getting the heat, Kawada and Tawei. Because I'm a much bigger fan of Kawada than I am Tawei. Tawei always strikes me as a guy who, he's very good and he knows exactly what to do, don't get me wrong.
But he's the B player in the team.
To me he is, because his offense compared to Kawada, it's night and day. It's a lot more light, but Kawada just beats the fuck out of guys, and you love it, you know. So if it wasn't Misawa and Kobashi, it'd probably be Kawada and Tawei, to be perfectly honest for me.
Misawa, Kobashi, individually fantastic. Together the matches absolutely kind of like almost revolutionary in that time period of the 90s, particularly when you're looking at what we were just talking about with Davey Boy and Owen, where like the divisions in America was a shit, and over in Japan you're having this hot shit going on. My only issue with whether to put it in best tag team, and this is good, this is really nitpicking for the sake of it, I don't really consider them as a tag team.
To me, that's a completely valid point that you just said, because to me, it is a difficult thing, and it kind of goes with the Funks as well, where when I think of them more as individuals more than the unit, that kind of hurts them somewhat. And maybe it shouldn't, it depends on the individual, I suppose.
I see them more, and please bear with me on this one, I see them more along the lines of something like the Mega Powers, where it was just like, and not in terms of like personalities or wrestling ability, but in terms of like, they weren't in the classic tag team form, it was just two individual guys who were great in their own right, great put together, but they don't immediately spring to mind.
Moving along now, we've got a few more to get to before we run out of time. Dylan Waco from Pro Wrestling Only says, if we are talking favourites, my pick has to be Buddy Rose and Doug Summers. They're only together for about a year and came around as the AWA was really collapsing, but they are still one of the great teams of all time. The feud with the Rockers is every bit as good as the Midnights vs. Rock'n'Rolls and Midnights Fantastics feud, and the August 30th, 1986 match from Vegas is one of the all-time classic tag matches in the history of pro wrestling. I love that match. The match where Sean does color and then Doug Summers bleeds as well. Jannetty bleeds. The only thing that really holds it back is the fact that it's got a bit of a shitty finish, cheap DQ finish at the end. But God, the heat in that match, and the fans is living and dying with every punch. There isn't a fan in that building who's looking at anything other than the match, and they're completely invested, and I love it.
If I'm not mistaken, it such is the significance of that match that it makes a couple of Sean's DVDs.
I think it's on Sean's From the Vault DVD, as a matter of fact. Yeah, the dynamic of the team was absolutely outstanding, as you had the scummiest of all scrubs, Pretty Boy Doug Summers, with the annoyingly athletic, but not as athletic as he thought he was, fat ass Playboy Buddy Rose, decked out in robes, with skeezy as fuck Sherry Martel treating them like the sexiest men on earth. Both guys were excellent bumpers and stooges, but also really good working on top. I've seen every tape match in the team's existence, and not one of them was less than good. They aren't the best team of all time because they weren't around long enough, but there's no team I would rather watch. A really good candidate there. I'm a huge Buddy Rose fan, especially Portland stuff, and you could talk all day about...
You could say he blew you away.
Oh, God, I was dreading a blow-away diet reference. They didn't work with as many different teams during that time frame too, because I mean they were working the Rockets pretty solid over a long period of time. So I think that's another thing that kind of holds them back from being considered the best. But they are really good every time I've ever seen them. Harmonic Generator from the UK Fan Forum, who actually had a really good full post on the UK Fan Forum that you can go back and check out. I recommend it. Says, I know they're recent, but I have to say my favourite is the Shield. They were just excellent. Of course they're all great as singles guys, but as a team they were sublime. I love the idea that even if you're three former world champions, you can take one of them down, but you can't take them down together. As a team, they're unstoppable. They had a fantastic combination of styles and they all gelled together perfectly. The madness of Ambrose, the dives of Rollins, and Reigns to smash people up. The Shield basically carried the WWE in 2013. You were guaranteed a great match every single time they came out. I miss them. I know they're a three-man unit, so it might not count as a team, but even so, I believe in the Shield. This is, I think, you know what? A great pick. I really love the Shield.
I echo a lot of the sentiments there of the email. I do miss them as a group. I think they were the glue of the company during that year. Absolutely, I can't argue with that at all. Unfortunately, I am going to be a bit pedantic in the sense of, and this isn't to disparage the emailer's choice or anyone who agrees with him. It's just when I look at them, I do think of it as a group and not necessarily a tag team.
In the same sense of the Freebirds, I'm guessing, right?
Yes, yeah. In the same way, I wouldn't pick the Freebirds, and in the same way, I wouldn't acknowledge Demolition when Crush comes in. In that sense,
I just think that when I think about the number of great tag team matches, because I mean, Raw would use those six mans as a crutch. Yeah, through a lot of those roles, I mean, they would go through multiple segments.
Yeah, they would, and
even the duo of Rollins and Reigns had a lot of really good matches on their own. So,
and when we think of the six man tags, the two with the Wyatt family,
oh yeah,
stick out as being really good matches.
Yeah, but, yeah, Harmonic Generator did actually mention in his feedback a lot of those matches, a lot of the different matches they had with different teams that were really good. So I didn't mention them there because I was trying to cut down the email. But yeah, I mean the Wyatts, you know, Dustin and Cody. We had some really good matches with them as well.
Yeah, it's probably, you know,
Daniel Bryan.
It's more my problem than it is anyone else's, that I can't disassociate them from a group into a tag team.
The match with the Wyatt at Elimination Chamber was my match of the year that year. That match was absolutely stonking. I will still claim to this day that should have been at Mania. I don't care what anyone else says. That's still just because of the awe and the crowd would just go. The crowd were fucking on fire when they're watching that, when they're both standing in the ring looking at each other. And I was also always think about their actual first official match at TLC against Team Hell No and Ryback has been really good as well.
Also, keep in mind that they had a really good one too. I think it was Elimination Chamber the following year. I think it was Sheamus, Ryback and Cena, I want to say. Another really good, I mean, God, they've had so many good ones.
Yeah.
Moving on now, Power Butchie from the UK Fan Forum with one of my favourite messages here. Dr. Tom Pritchard's hair resplendent in its feathered glory.
Oh.
Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey. Well, everything wonderfully sleazy. From his ginger thinning mullet to his pot belly to his to his drooping stash to his gap tooth grin to the way he would grind those hips in such a way that if he was fucking a woman like that up against the wall, her seminal fluids would give Jimmy trench foot due to their sheer volume. And those robes and those trunks with the wings on the arse, and if that wasn't enough, the matches. The original incarnation was good, but with Jimmy Del Rey it went into the stratosphere. The chemistry was absolutely shit hot and they are bona fide super bands of the rock and rolls, the criminally underrated thugs of Tracy Smothers and Tony Anthony, the Steiners, the Smoking Guns. They had fun appearances in ECW and they even got pure gold out of two of the most overrated wrestlers of all time in Lance Storm and Chris Jericho, a one-armed Jericho no less. The Gigolo super kick and moonsault body block were things of beauty, only bettered by the dusty curls of the better Pritchard brother. They could mix it up in wild brawls, which wouldn't be out of place on a Monday night in the Mid-South Coliseum, and could also do the more work rate style, as well as just good meat and potatoes face in peril style southern tags. Real all-rounders. So yeah, my favourite team is the celestial heartthrobs of wrestling, the Heavenly Bodies. I love this team, man. When I was a kid, this might be the first heel team I really loved. Gigolo Jim Del Rey was fucking the shit when I was a kid.
What a wonderfully graphic yet comical email that was.
I never look at Trenchfoot the same, I'll tell you that.
I think I'm going to go to bed having nightmares about it. But they were a really fun team. as you were reading it, and I was sat here giggling to myself, I just had, all I could picture was Pritchard walking out down the aisle,
dusting his hair,
and it was, and they had some really good matches. I mean, I mentioned the one earlier with the Steiners, which I'm glad people got to see because it was on a bigger stage than they would have got in Smoky Mountain. But they had excellent matches in Smoky Mountain.
Yeah, they did.
Jim Cornette's probably still not forgiven Jericho for breaking his arm, but you know, by the by, a really fun character in Jimmy Del Rey. And you've got Jim Cornette involved again, so yeah, just fun all round.
Yeah, I will say the one thing that I was always so disappointed in the WWF when the Heavenly Bodies were treated like the Beverly Brothers, and that's not a knock on the Beverleys in the sense, but they were just treated like the bottom rung tag team on the totem pole. And in the mid 90s, that division was the shit, and they could have really done with the Heavenly Bodies as the heel champions with Jim Cornette as manager. I don't know why they never did it,
or at least be chasing the belts themselves, because the match with the Steiners, although it was for the tag belts, it came out of nowhere. They were never really pushed. It's a real disservice to them that, particularly at that time, they weren't given a greater purpose within the company.
Oh, we have a winner! I think that was a great email, to be honest, to describe this tag team. Just straight away, I knew who he was talking about. I mean, yeah, Cornette, great. Tom Pritchard, yeah, with a little fluff. Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey. There's just so many things wrong to the point where it's all right. That's where I think it's just the one, the ginger, which was short hair at first that grew into a mullet, the tash, the ginger hairy chest, the bit of the belly, and then just that weird like gyrating as he's just smiling to some unfortunate woman or man.
It was the real big wiggle.
Yeah, it was just fantastic. And then just the fact that this guy looks so bad, really, but was so good in the ring and was able to do some really like fantastic stuff. They were such a great tag team. I love the music as well. The music's really good. I like the jackets as well. It's really great. The only thing, I'm going to be an asshole now. The only thing that I think would go in it against its favour, and don't hold me against it because I do love this team. This will be in my top 10. Is the fact that it is basically a 90s version of the Midnights.
Yeah.
That's essentially what it was, with the whole, even to the point where, you know, one wearing a long jacket, one wearing a small jacket, for Christ's sake. It was everything about them was just like, this is the new version of the Midnights, which are different.
Well, Stan Lane was originally in the Heavenly Bodies. It should be noted there that Stan Lane was originally with Dr. Tom, and the idea was, when Stan Lane wanted to kind of phase out doing the dates, they brought in Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey.
Yeah. So it's unfortunate that has that kind of little kind of asterisk at the bottom, like that they were basically copying a gimmick. But saying that, I'm absolutely okay with it, because just how good the act was. And I agree with you guys. It was a real shame that they weren't used more, because they really could have carried a division that was otherwise going very stagnant.
On to the final nomination here. Bibaba from UK Fan Forum says, "My favourite tag team in terms of how much I enjoyed their work while they were active was LAX. They functioned perfectly in a big man, little man unit. The two of them were distinct enough wrestlers that their styles complemented each other for the purposes of telling a story in a match. On the surface, the gimmick could be seen as cheap heat, but it was more than that. A group of Latin Americans who were disenfranchised with the role of Latinos in society. They were edgy, unique, and seemed to generate good, legitimate heat. Conan was a fantastic mouthpiece for the group. What a great talk. It's a shame we didn't last longer with them. As for feuds, none were better than the rivalry with AJ and Daniels, which led to the thrilling cage match at Bound for Glory 2006, which is my second favourite TNA match ever. They also had meaningful programs with AMW, Team 3D, and Beer Money. Normally I want a team to have a tag team finisher, but the Border Tossing Gringo Killer with my 5-star finishes that I was always hoping would be the end of the match. This is a pick that I'm actually quite fond of, believe it or not.
Yeah.
In terms of modern tag teams, that initial 6-month run of the LAX, I remember they had a match on Victory Road with like Sanjay Dutt and Ron Killings, yeah, which came out of West fucking nowhere, and it was really good. It's just like, yeah, Moody Jack Melendez doing the introduction, them coming out of their own entrance way, the DX music video style entrance that they would have, and then you got, you know, Hernandez, who's way better in a tag team than he ever was as a singles guy. Homicide, who I actually would make a case for, I prefer in a tag team as well, to be honest. I preferred him rather than in a singles capacity. Conan, goddamn, was he good. And the Latino thing was a bit of a hot button issue in 2006 on its own anyway, so it didn't feel as much like cheap heat to me. But man, I just loved it. The music was fucking cool. Everything about this was awesome.
Yeah, choke on that, Bookwood, but you were wrong. You were so wrong. One of the few, if only, examples of something that TNA got right, at least for a short period of time, it was like you say, it was a hot button issue. It was pertinent to the times. It was very relevant, without being cheap. Perfect. The only use for Conan.
Yeah.
At that time,
I'd agree.
As much stick as I've given Conan on previous podcasts, I would never suggest that he couldn't talk his arse off when he was motivated. It was a really, really fun team. Had some really good matches. That the Styles Daniels ones were excellent. Just a shame it didn't have longer.
I think it's a shame that they never pushed it as far as they could, because I really think they could have actually used them as a main event act.
You got the sense with a group like that, or a tag team, and that the sort of the gimmick that they're linked to. There is always a sense from, I'd say board level, but board level in TNA doesn't sound right. But from a management sense, where, you know, you'd only ever let a gimmick like that get so far before they'd start to get cold feet.
I don't understand why.
I don't understand
TNA
why either. But
had
but you,
so
you can, you,
few things that yeah. clicked, and here was one slap them in the face, and they just.
But you can see what I mean. No, you can think, oh, this is getting over. Oh, this is pretty hot. Oh, it's quite a touchy subject. This could be misconstrued. What if an advertiser doesn't like this? What if a TV exec doesn't like this? I don't understand why either. I think it was a perfectly fine gimmick, but I can see the logic in why they didn't go the whole hog with it.
Before that period, during that period, and after that period of LAX, they were always trying to look for that kind of invasion group, or that group that was going to take over the company. You know, they did it, whether it was with the Main Event Mafia or Fortune 4 or something like even the Aces and Eights, you know, in particular.
That,
all these things that they threw time and I guess money at to try and get them over, when they never realised that they actually had the best version of that act already in LAX. That LAX could have been that group, even if it was just two of them and one mouthpiece, taking over that company. And I think you're absolutely right, they could have main evented it. There's a very good argument for it being the best tag team TNA had. But I wouldn't say it was necessarily my favourite. I always liked Beer Money. I always liked the Motor City Machine Guns. I also really liked AJ and Daniels, who LAX feuded with. But saying that, that's probably got the same Kobashi Masawa syndrome, where they were better off as singles and it was just a brief time period. I don't think LAX is the only good tag team or viable tag team from TNA that could be mentioned. But I certainly think as an overall act, it certainly is ahead of all those other better in-ring teams.
Yeah, I think there's actually something to that. I think that of those teams you just mentioned, I think LAX is by far the one with the highest ceiling, the most marketable, and the fact they had great matches with a lot of teams, I think it kind of goes to that as well. We've pretty much run the gamut here on great tag teams, all-time favourites, all-time best. Before we wrap this up, before we head off on the old dusty trail, around the table, your picks for all-time favourite and for all-time best. What are you saying? Make your decisions, gentlemen.
Well, there's been a lot of good points made around the table, a lot of excellent points from the emailers. With that in mind, I'm sticking to my guns and saying, screw you, I'm going Tully and Arn.
For both?
Yeah, for both. Screw it. I'm right.
Gee.
I think, I'm sticking to my guns on the favourite part, definitely. It's never going to change. It's always going to be the Hart Foundation. Very best, though, I think, in my head, I think it's probably either the Midnights or the Freebirds, if I was to extend it to the three-man, just because of the kind of heat they generally got and the kind of work that they did in their territories at the time. As a great heel team, which you don't really get these days, or even in the 90s, essentially, whereas you actually got a proper heel act where people hated them, and that's a key word. So I think as a best, as doing their jobs, Midnight Express, either version, and the Freebirds.
Best, my pick would be Kobashi and Misawa. For all-time favourites, God, it's so hard not to cop out and pick two teams. I'm going to go with the Rockers, I think. I love Sean Amai as a team. I think they were so good. And I can watch any Rockers match and enjoy it. And I think there are very few teams that I can say that for. So I'll go with the Rockers here. But it's been fun to look back at all these different tag teams, because we don't have that today, so it's a missing element in wrestling.
No shit!
You won't be seeing it at Elimination Chamber, no matter how many people they stick in those pods. So all the best. But still, thank you very much for listening. If you have any comments, any feedback you want to give us, scgradio@hotmail.com. For Carl Jones.
Just the two of us. We can make it if we try.
4G John Chase.
Just the two of us, you and I.
I am Liam O'Rourke and we are out of here. This what? Song's much cooler.
Here comes the axe, and here comes the smasher.